You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 17 December. We've got local inflation data later this morning, expected 3.6%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we chat with Nerina Fisser, ETFSA. It has been a crazy year in the ETF market locally, a crazy good year, the resi one, more than doubled. And then we're chatting with Wandile Shalobo, Chief Economist at Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Foot and Mouth plans to vaccinate the cattle herd. We're also vaccinating chickens. And what do we expect from the rains in 2026? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Nerina Fisser, ETFSA. Nerina, appreciate the time. A little bit speechless. The Resi 10, the Satrix Resi 10, doubled this year. I don't know that I've ever seen an ETF double in a single calendar year.
Yes, good morning, Simon. It is unusual, absolutely. Yes, we've seen it before. And in fact, if I go back to the late teens, 2017, 2019, 2020, the rhodium, the One Invest Rhodium ETF, in fact, in 2020, almost tripled. But what is the big difference here? When we're talking the Satrix Resi, we're talking an equity ETF, yeah, a diversified portfolio of shares compared to a single commodity like gold or platinum or rhodium. So for me, that really was the amazing story of the Resi this year, is that, yes, you're right, 150% including dividends when we look at the Satrix Resi in a single year. Wow. That's all I can say.
Wow, absolutely. And then the second on my list is the Satrix Sharia Top 40. And people are scratching their head. But of course, the Sharia is usually quite concentrated in minings because of the rules.
Exactly. And by the way, the other interesting sector that you see in that Sharia compliant ETF is a lot of the technology, telecommunications and so on. So yes, as the Sharia index of the JSE stands at the moment, actually quite an inappropriate index, if I can call it that, from a concentration perspective.
Sure.
Certainly the JSE is currently looking at amending the rules of that. Currently, just for those that have interest, they take the current top 40 constituents, then screen them for Sharia compliancy, and you end up with only about 16 or 17 stocks. The proposed way to change this would be to say, look at all the Sharia compliant shares, then pick the top 40 from that. And so you will still then probably, you know, have a proper top 40 index that is Sharia compliant. And I think that's one of the things we can certainly look forward to in 2026.
The beauty, though, if you were holding a vanilla, and I'm going to call it boring, but boring in a nice way, not in a bad way. If you were holding a vanilla top 40 ETF, you have had a spectacular year, and that is the beauty of an index ETF. It catches the moves. I don't know who called gold back in Jan, but you didn't have to. You just had to own the top 40.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that is exactly the beauty of it, because of course that top 40 also adjusts over time. So you're right, you don't have to call the winners in advance. By being exposed to this type of sort of blue chip index and ETF of those shares, you get the waves, you get the moves. And I think you use the term boring. This is really a case where boring is good, where you don't have to think and worry about your investment. The ETF is doing the work for you. You as the investor just have to make the decision to own the ETF, and everything else between the market and the index structure, basically the returns is created for you in that way.
Absolutely. But running my eye down the list, I mean, you know, we're talking crazy numbers, plus 100% here, 35% there. It's broadly been a very, very good year. Almost any ETF or active or passive you were holding. My list of red is a quick eyeball of it. Maybe there's a dozen red ones, and they're all single digits down. It's just been a spectacular year wherever you were.
It has been spectacular. And I think in particular, it's been a spectacular year for local investments. Mm. So we've spoken about, you know, the resi, we've spoken about the likes of gold, we've spoken about the top 40 and so on. But even when I look beyond equities, local property, you know, up almost 30%, yeah. Local bonds, 20-25% return that we've seen this year. So it really has been a great year for local, for South African-based investments. And if I compare that to the global stuff, you know, almost at the bottom of that list sits the long favored S&P 500 at, I don't know, 5-6% round about there. Mm-hmm. It certainly has been a year not just for South Africa, but also for other emerging markets as well. So on the global scale, certainly the winners have been China, emerging markets and so on. And so when you look towards the traditional winners of the last 10, 15 years being the US in particular, and with that being developed market equities, 2025, saw a complete reverse of that. And I guess one of the key questions for us as we head into 2026 is this the start of a reversal of that trend? You know, when you look at the performance of emerging markets relative to developed markets, we've seen 15 years of underperformance for emerging markets. And I do believe that we've seen the first of the reversal of that trend. And if I had to take a pick for the next 10 years, you know, let's pick these ones that make money while we sleep, I certainly would prefer emerging market exposure rather than traditional US developed market exposure.
It's actually a great point. It has been a decade or more of horror. And in the EM space, there are JSE listed, there are New York listed, there's a lot there. One of the other big themes of 2025, aside from us all being richer, which is really, really a great feeling, active ETFs. These came out, if memory serves, it was late 2023. We've seen a lot of them coming into market, and they really do add a nice new sort of angle to the availability for investors.
Absolutely. I think this is where we start realizing that the ETF structure really is an access point. It's about where you buy your investments. You know, traditionally, actively managed unit trusts, one would buy that via a LISP platform of some sort or directly from the unit trust provider. Now we see these actively managed products being available via the stock exchange in our ETF structure. And yes, 2 years of active ETFs, we're currently sitting at a relatively modest AUM or market cap of you know, just about 18, 20 billion round about there, 35 listings in total. So it still represents a relatively small portion of our universe. But I think what has been quite interesting is to see how, particularly in the interest bearing, the bond space, we've seen quite a lot of these come to market. And when we think of the traditional sort of reason for indexation, certainly your ability to outperform an equity index. We know, you know, from the SPIVA reports and so on, we know that that is incredibly difficult to do. The bond space is something different, interest-bearing space. So for me, I would expect the actively managed universe to expand specifically in this. And I think that's been a really great addition to not just the fact that it's now active that we've got this, but a much broader variety and range of income-bearing, interest-bearing ETFs that we've got on the market. And I certainly expect to see a lot more of this in future. Also, the introduction of some of the well-known active brands, you know, Coronation, 91 and so on, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you probably would have seen they'd never come to the market as ETF issuers. Well, never say never.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that's just it. That was my next point. And I like your point around the bonds, because when I look at that SPIVA report, and the 1 year one is of less importance, it's the 3, 5, 10. It is the income space where the active managers can actually earn their stripes. That is a significant point. The biggie, I buried the lead, but I'm keeping it for last. Last month was 25 years of ETFs on the JSE. Top 40 listed back in November 2000. I actually bought it in that IPO, and I've done about 12% a year. I mean, that's astounding.
Yeah. That is astounding. You know, when we spoke about sort of the reason for investing in capital growth assets, if we're looking at something that can generate 7% above inflation for us, you know, that really is that golden investment that you want to have in your portfolio. And a proud moment, I think, for this industry to look back on 25 years, see what has been achieved and how it really has brought wealth creation to the masses, the democratization of investments. But I think looking at the success that we've seen with the likes of Satrix 40, isn't it wonderful to realize that it's one of just many? And you talk about the 12% per annum, you know, for the Satrix 40 over a 25-year period. The great thing is we don't have to restrict our investments to just South African equities. If we look at what's now available to us here from the comfort of our own home and our local market, that we can buy the world. You know, you can buy a total world equity over this period of approximately 15, 16% per annum over the last 10 years. So when I look at that, I say, absolutely, Satrix 40, it is the people's choice. It is the people's favorite. But you know what? We've grown up to the extent that we now know we don't have to restrict our investment portfolios to less than 1% of the global investment opportunity set. And for me, that's one of the important features of ETFs, is they brought the world to us here on our local market. And the world's your oyster. You have the ability now to really invest in thousands of companies all around the world through the simplicity and the ease of a single ETF that you buy listed on the JSE.
Yeah, absolutely. I echo that. I mean, some of us, you know, my listeners, myself, we like the active part, but we actually have such vast choice in the ETF. We really don't need to. And I must give a hat tip to, of course, Mike Brown, your colleague, who was there. He was Mr. Satrix, Mr. ETF. He was
absolutely
the gentleman who started it all 25 years ago. Nerina Visser, ETFSA, always appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Wandile Shalobo, Chief Economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Wandile, always appreciate the time. I want to start off looking back, but let's start with foot and mouth disease, and more perhaps importantly, the plan to vaccinate the entire herd. I'm not sure what the phraseology is for foot and mouth. Huge task, but a massive milestone for the industry potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's necessary, Simon, because if you look at the South African farming economy, about half of it is livestock and mainly cattle. So whenever we're struggling with these diseases, the impact of that tends to be felt across the industry. Now, our national herd of cattle is about 12 million. Wow. And of course, about 7.2 million of that is in the commercial production. Mm-hmm. The logistics of getting through all of this, but also ensuring that we have sufficient vaccine supply. These are all of the aspects that would be difficult. But the vaccination has started in some of the other areas and continuing. But I think this is going to be a momentous task. And remember, it's not going to happen just 1 year. We'll probably do 2 or 3 years until we are completely clean.
I hear you, 12 million. That is a giant number. But it does mean that in a couple of years' time, is foot and mouth then, once we've vaccinated the entire herd, is foot and mouth then something that is behind us as a country?
It will certainly be behind us, especially if then we place the strict controls after that. Because remember, foot and mouth disease in general comes from buffaloes, which means then are on the wild animal side. So the movement of livestock, especially in those provinces that are bordering some of the wildlife reserves, we need to be careful about that. But also on the borders up north, so that there's no cattle that are either crossing from Zimbabwe or any other country without actually making sure that our borders are correct. So it's almost like a task that the Department of Agriculture carries, but one would nudge that the public works, in as far as the general fencing, they do their part to collaborate here, and the police.
Yeah, gotcha. We also, and I was chatting with Gary Arnold from Astro, the last set of results, we're moving forward with vaccinating chickens. He said at the time that they'd done only about 5% of their flock, but they'd, just as results came out, got permission for potentially doing another 30%. Again, important, because avian flu sort of pops up and decimates the industry for a while.
Absolutely. And I mean, you remember the stories of potential shortages of eggs in 2023. Those were all of the challenges. And unlike the foot and mouth, the avian influenza has a much more difficult impact, as one stock may die in the process. So vaccinating and making sure that you are in place, it's a good approach. And importantly, Simon, I mean, this is not, we're not the first country to actually do this. In cattle, if you think about Brazil, Argentina, they've been down this path, and many others when it comes to poultry. And we've seen since 2014 that the occurrence of these diseases is much more faster nowadays. So all of this pushes us to this situation then where we we have to actually vaccinate in order to ensure that our livestock and agriculture in general is in healthy footing.
Yeah, absolutely. I take your point on that. Let's touch on tariffs. And I mean, AGOA, as I understand, is essentially over. But the US has removed tariffs on some products that are going from South Africa into the US. What is our current status? Notwithstanding, it could change quickly. But where are we right now with the tariff scenario?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Liberation Day tariffs is 30%. Mm. And of course, with the AGOA reprieve, we were able to stick at that number. Now, in the absence of AGOA, that means that South Africa, at a basic start, before you apply the Liberation Day tariffs, we have a base tariff of about 3.4% if you look at the average most favored nations approach. And then that means then without an AGOA, our tariffs would raise to, on average, about 33.4% that we would face in the US instead of just the 30% of Liberation Day tariffs. But the positive of it is the fact that today, there's still no formal communication that is coming out of the US as to where AGOA is. I would almost say that AGOA remains, as of December 2025, really in a state of limbo until the US administration provides us a guidance. If then we are not included, then we will be at the 33.4%. If we are included, we'll remain with these Liberation Day tariffs. The US market, important, of course, for South Africa, and more so our friends in the auto industry and many others, but in farming, that is about 4% of our farming exports. So far, we've been able to see solid activity to the US. Farmers took advantage of the 90-day pause to an extent that in Q2, we saw that our agricultural exports to the US were up significantly, about 26% year on year. We exported, and then in the third quarter, we saw that they cooled off a little bit by 10% from what we had seen in the previous quarter. So all in all, for a year, I think the numbers will still look fairly well when we have the full year data.
And is there, I mean, it can't be easy, but is there potential, if there is a tariff remains at a plus 30%, to find other markets? I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and suggest that. I imagine it's a challenge, but it must be something industry is looking at. I know the minister has been, he's been to Asia, he's been to a couple of places looking for markets for some of our agri products.
I mean, I think that what we are blessed with is because the South African agricultural exports in general are pretty much diverse. I mean, we are 50% into the African continent or so. And then you have the EU, about 21%. Then you have Asia and the Middle East, amongst others. The key thing then is about how do you increase the volume to some of these markets. Asia, Middle East remains very attractive because of their potential upside in building those markets, while Africa and the EU are more about maintenance of what we have. So the effort is there. But of course, as you say, it's not overnight because there are relationships that are there. And there's a reason why the folks in the citrus style export a lot to the US. So there are all of those things. But nonetheless, I mean, the diversification strategy and the conversation around that is underway. And it's something that we must power through, regardless of what happens in the tariffs, because we still have so much production that will be coming up in from the farms in the next years. And we will be looking at saying, where do we export all of these products? So diversification lays the foundation for that.
Gotcha. How's 2026 looking, and particularly in terms of rains? You know, anecdotally, I'm here in Joburg. We've got lots of rains. The Vaal Dam is full, but of course, it's a much broader country than that. What are indications for next year's crop season?
2026 is looking to be one of the excellent seasons. 2025 was good. We were supported by La Nina rains, which delivered record crops. I mean, soybean, it's a record crop. Maize, second largest on record. And in fruits and vegetables, really excellent harvest. We think that going into next year, we will continue in that momentum, more so as farmers are also increasing the area they plant. And I think the performance of the sector will be even much more stronger because the vaccination would have been long underway, supporting even the cattle industry. And then that gives us a much more solid recovery than the 2025, which we call it as an uneven recovery when one look at the sectorial basis.
I get your point. And I suppose there's sort of many moving parts here. Record crops means potentially prices coming down. But the truth is, you've got the record crop. Farmers have also got the benefit. I mean, diesel prices are lower than they have been in previous years. So a good time to be a farmer at this point.
a good time depending on what commodity you are in.
Yeah.
But I would say all things considered, we're still in a really, really reasonably good period in the South African agriculture. That's 2025. And I think we will continue in that momentum going into next year. And of course, for consumer, mm-hmm. we think that even the moderating food price inflation is a theme that we'll take and continue in going into next year.
Okay, good news as well. We'll leave that there. Wandile Shilobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Appreciate the time.
Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management. That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We hear every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Chantal Marks, Retail Stocks.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.